Hello and welcome to Reanimation Protocol. I'm Doug and I just deleted the first few minutes of this podcast, so we're having to record it again. with me is my co-host.
Hi there, I'm Andy and I'm still enthusiastic.
Yay! We're all enthusiastic. We're a very positive podcast. We get on to talking about Chapter Proof later. So, we had a week off. And Chris isn't here. Now, the two of those are kind of linked. Chris had a little baby boy last week. So he's been off sort of doing what he does. I don't know what you do. But congratulations to Chris. Not that he did much. Congratulations mainly to his other half.
Who did all the work.
Yep. And Chris, who did 5 minutes of work about 9.5 months ago.
Boom.
We did the same joke and I deleted it, so it's not quite got the impact a second time around. So Chris,
I can act. Hang on, I'll try acting. Oh, that was harsh. Ooh, there we go.
So that's about your normal response to my jokes. Chris may well be joining us later if he gets home in time, so he will dial in if he can. But for now, you're stuck with me and Andy. So, in the 2 weeks or so since you last heard from us, there's been a fair bit happening. It's been chapter approved, as we mentioned. We're going to talk about that in a bit. And there have been two codexes that have been put up for pre-order. First one is the Blood Angels, which I think look pretty awesome. What about you, Andy?
I've not actually seen much of the content that's going to be in the book, but I will be buying the Blood Angels codex.
Why are you wanting to buy it?
Been toying with the idea of putting some Blood Angels together, but mainly as a painting project, as in using all the Heresy models that they've got at the moment.
Yeah.
Using them, but obviously, trying to decide if I want to try and convert a couple of them so I can use them in 40k as opposed to 30k.
Yeah, you definitely can.
Oh, excellent. So basically just that, and also if the rumours are correct about a possible Sanguinius.
I think those rumours came from Chris and no one else outside this podcast.
Oh, well, but not happening.
But hopefully we'll stir the flame. So yeah, definite Sanguinius release.
Just to paint it, I mean, I love the Forge World model for it.
There isn't a Forge World model yet.
Is there not?
No.
Oh, no, sorry. I'm thinking of a third-party knockoff then.
Yeah. he should be coming out as a Forge World model soon. Basically, the next book for Forge World is Blood Angels and Dark Angels. But it's been delayed, obviously, because Alan Bly passed away very sadly. So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that should be coming out soon. So there'll be definitely be even more Blood Angel stuff in from Forge World soon. And I must admit, looking at that book, looking at those models, and hearing about it, I'm very, very, very tempted to sell off my Dark Eldar and buy some Blood Angels. They just seem so much fun.
Seen the transfer sheet that Forge will sell for the Blood Angels?
Yes, I have.
Oh, it's beautiful.
But they all are, to be fair.
I've got to admit, I bought the Ultramarines one, and my mate bought the Blood Angels one. We were both down there.
Yeah.
And we were comparing them, and I was sort of thinking, mine looks really dull at the side of the Blood Angels one.
Well, yeah, it's the Ultramarines one. I'm not sure what you were expecting, like flaming skulls and stuff.
How dare you? They are the Ultimate Legion. They are our spiritual leagues, etc. Leagues?
Yeah.
Words, it's Wednesday.
So anyway, what's in the Blood Angels books? There's a load of cool stratagems. There's their psychic powers, one of which is the Wings of Sanguinius, which is the awesome one where you get to cast it on your Librarian Dreadnought, and your Librarian Dreadnought can fly. So he can fly around the battlefield, punching airplanes in the face.
Amazing.
Which is just brilliant. I mean, a couple of editions ago, I say a couple, it's probably three now. They used to be able to have flying land raiders, and sadly you can't have that anymore. But
thankfully,
flying librarians, dreadnoughts. There's loads of awesome stuff from what I've heard about jump packs, like being able to pick a unit up and basically deep strike it again. There's loads of basically lots of what you'd expect from Blood Angels, which is fast, hard hitting,
fast combat.
Yeah, but one of the other good things, which is the thing that's really got me tempted to get into it, is they can now use Primaris Space Marines properly. Previously they couldn't. They also have got access to most of the standard Space Marine stuff, which they didn't before. And they've got access to the Cataphracti and Tartarus Terminator armour, which is the Horus Heresy stuff.
Yep.
So their range has pretty much doubled with no new releases, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty good.
Yeah, but although they're releasing the Primaris kit reboxed with a couple of add-on sprues, so you can basically have cool knee pads and the like, which, if you're going to buy Primaris, you might as well get those, I guess. It's probably not worth throwing your old ones away and buying them instead.
I bought the Ultramarine Primaris upgrade sprues.
Yeah.
It does just make them stand out a little more. I mean, I'm still in love with the Primaris Marines anyway.
Yeah.
But this way, at least, I can have them looking a bit, little less standard.
I really shouldn't. I mean, I've got so much Dark Eldar stuff, including quite a lot that Sarah got me for my birthday, but they're all sat in my cupboard, unpainted, and I've got no enthusiasm for them. I may change my mind when the Codex comes out, but right now, I want Dark Angels and Blood Angels.
I keep hold of them. Honestly, keep hold of your Dark Eldar and just buy a couple of kits just to get started to see, number one, if you enjoy painting Blood Angels or Dark Angels. I won't get rid of your Dark Eldar.
Well,
once their Codex comes out, and if it's any good, you'll regret it.
That's very true. Dark Angels, they haven't seen too much of them yet. They're coming out a week after, so a couple of weeks before Christmas. But the things I have seen have been there's a stratagem to give your Deathwing Terminators minus one, make things be minus one to wound when they hit them, which is pretty cool.
That is nice.
I can't remember all of them. I'm sure there are other podcasts who are a bit more up to date with this sort of thing, but Dark Angels are just a very cool, very different chapter. So, I mean, if you're listening to this and you don't really know what Dark Angels and Blood Angels are and what the difference is, I guess Blood Angels are wacky, crazy space vampires that like charging at things. So, I mean, as we spoke about...
say vampire, but they're not emo vampire, thankfully.
No, they are proper...
angry vampires.
Yeah, so, as we alluded to in the last episode when we spoke about Space Marines, their Primarch was murdered by Horus, and at that moment, they were already a little bit dodgy. They had a thing called the Red First...
The Red First and the Black Rage.
Yeah, one of them came on when Sanguinius died, and the other one they always had. And it basically turned them into vampires that eventually went crazy and just wanted to throw themselves at the enemy until they died. So they have these things called death companies, where once you go crazy, they put you in this death company because you're not to be trusted. You're not going to stand next to your shield mate and hold the line. You're just going to run at stuff and eventually die. So they've got these death companies with chaplains sort of presiding over them. And, yeah, they're very sort of... they're noble, bloodthirsty vampires, and I think that's quite a cool, sort of different thing to have in Space Marines. And Dark Angels are a bit different. They're a bit more tragic.
Emo.
They are very emo. They're a brooding. I mean, the name, clears them a name, isn't it? The Dark Angels. They're all dark and gothic and broody. But I'm. I didn't really think much of them until I read the Horus Heresy books, the first couple, and they're actually pretty cool. They started off as basically chivalric knights, living in castles on their home world and going out and fighting these mythical beasts that were terrorising their planet. And then
essentially chaos spawn.
Yeah, that's what it was hinted at. Mm. And then Lionel Johnson was their Primarch, and he was discovered, and he basically banded all these knights together, and they went off and killed all of the beasts, and it was all good. And then the Imperium turned up and said, "You're a Primarch, everyone should be a Space Marine." And they were like, okay, I guess that sounds cool. Mm-hmm. And then the Imperium basically bulldozed their lovely planet, which they just reclaimed, and turned it into, well, what the Imperium does, which is basically a tool for getting more space marines. And yes. Half a faction went, wait a second, this isn't what we signed up for, and kind of rebelled. And they didn't they didn't really turn to chaos, as far as I know. I don't think they were like doing the demonic rituals, but basically they ended up a lot when the Lion came back and realised what had happened. He destroyed his own planet, killed his friends who'd rebelled against him, and then spent the rest of his life moping.
Essentially, you could say that he started the rifts in his own legion
by
instantly distrusting the Dark Angel Space Marines, who were all Terran-born before they met the Caliban lot.
Yeah, he... I mean, as in most of the Horus Heresy stuff, it was all stupidity that caused all of it. People were just, like, not so stupid. Like, the Emperor deliberately winding up Angron, basically. But yeah, so the cool thing about the Dark Angels is now, because they've got this thing where loads of them rebelled against the Imperium, they keep that a secret, and you don't, even when you're a Dark Angel, you don't know about that until you get to the very highest levels, until you become a First Company Terminator, or it's a Deathwing, isn't it?
Yes.
So there's all these layers of secrecy, and it's very Masonic. Lots of hidden handshakes in dark corners. Which,
yeah, pretty much. I mean, the higher up in rank you go, the more of the secrets they reveal, as it were.
Yeah, and
must be a bit of a shock when they get the final ones.
Well, yes, exactly. And the main secret is that those who rebelled didn't all die, and that they're still out there, and they are called the Fallen, and you can buy them. Don't know exactly what you do with them. I guess you play them as Chaos.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because in, I think it was in a previous codex, don't ask me which edition, there were the rules for playing the Fallen, and I was wondering if they were going to put them back into this one.
I think they're in the index, so if they're not in this, they'll be in something. They're definitely playable.
Chaos then, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, so that's the Dark Angels, and their playstyle is quite odd. They're split into two wings, which is the Raven Wing, who are the knights on horseback with lances, except they replace their horses with speeder bikes and land speeders.
And I hate them.
Yeah, they've got some really weird models, which are like flying.
Nah, it's not that. I think the models are great. For some reason, GW have made the Raven Wing the greatest bikers in the galaxy or whatever. And you're there thinking, that was the White Scars. At least give the White Scars something. You know?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I don't like bikes in 40K. I think they're kind of cheesy, kind of very, you know, early 1990s.
I'd agree. That's why I like jet bikes.
I still think they're kind... jet bikes are better, but I still... yeah, they're just a bit weird. Whereas
talk about horses with the Imperial Guard.
Yeah, I love horses. Rough riders, man.
I think World War I kind of said horses on a battlefield are not much cop anymore.
Whereas Deathwing are the Terminators, and they're very Terminator heavy. Now, I'm wondering if they're going to be able to make them good, because so far in 8th edition, Terminators have kind of been a bit of a liability. They've got two wounds, brilliant, but most things worth shooting at them do at least D3 damage, if not more.
And basically, I think Terminators have been completely upstaged by aggressors.
Yeah, that could be the case. I mean, generally, at the moment, it's just better to take 100 guys with las guns than it is to take 5 Terminators for the same price, because it will take you a lot longer to kill those 100 guys with las guns, and they'll probably do more damage. So I think the system itself isn't very keyed to the idea of Terminators at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see if they can fix that with a Deathwing. Looks like the one stratagem I've seen has been pretty cool. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
So, yeah, they should be good armies. Happily, one of my opponents is already a Blood Angels player, so it's not as if they're just going to instantly jump ship, if you get me meaning.
Yeah, I'm more excited about the Blood Angels than I am the Dark Angels, but the Dark Angels look so cool to paint, doing those sort of dark greens with the light green highlight. And in fact,
that's why I want to paint up some Fallen. I love the models, but I just can't bring myself to paint up the Rebels, and by that I mean the normal Dark Angels.
Yeah, if you play Dark Angels, be prepared for everyone to tell you that you are a heretic. But you are actually playing Chaos.
Yep.
It's a real shame Chris isn't here, actually, because he started, he's given up on his Necrons from the sound of it after doing some really cool weathering effects and started painting his Dark Angels up. So the hobby butterfly in him is strong. So, yeah, those are the two big new factions. And then coming straight after that, are demons in early January, which be pretty cool. I've actually been looking at demons because obviously I've got my Death Guard and I've pretty much got everything you could have for Death Guard now. And obviously the logical thing to do would be to ally in some Nurgle demons. So I may actually pick Pet Codex up and pick up a bunch of Nurgle demons because they're very cool to paint Nurgle. They're quite easy. And you get quite good results with lots of washes and the like. So yeah, that could be interesting.
I'll be picking up that codex as well.
Yeah, demons are a bit of a tough one because they generally, they tend to be either really, really, really strong or really, really rubbish because they ignore quite a lot of the core rules of the game. They tend not to have armor saves. They tend to have ward saves instead. Yeah. They tend to have a lot of psychers. They don't die, they disappear, they don't tend to flee in terror, although they kind of do at the moment. So it'll be currently demons, certainly Tzeentch demons, are very strong in both Age of Sigmar and 40k. So it'll be interesting to see how they balance them out in the new codex.
I'm expecting the Nurgle demons to be good, because Death Guard are a very, very popular army at the moment. And don't want something to complement that.
Well, the thing you have to remember with these codex is, I think pretty much, I could be wrong, but I think pretty much all of them were written way before 8th edition came out. Probably before they even announced it. So
yeah, but look at the amount. I mean, it takes a long time for them to actually sculpt a mini, then get it tooled, etc., etc., etc. And just look at the sheer amount of new models that the Death Guard have got.
Yeah, they probably wanted to give them some good stuff.
Really push them. And not just that, they put them in the main box game.
Yeah.
That's usually the armies they want to push. Primaris, Death Guard.
So yeah, that'll be interesting. I'll probably be picking that one up. And
I hope so. I've already got a load of Nurgle demons upstairs in a case.
So the other thing that came out, they did the Battle Forces, which seemed pretty cool. 100 quid for about 150 quid's worth of stuff. I ordered mine from the Outpost. Great shop. They don't pay me to say that. Sadly, it hasn't arrived yet because GW said they couldn't have their stock until the 19th or something. So, which is quite annoying because I live down the road from Warhammer World and I could have just popped and got one. But but for 20 quid off, so I got it for 80 quid.
That's not bad at all, really.
It's 30 quid more than a start collecting box for about 2.5 times of stuff.
The problem is, I looked at them all, and there's not one of them that I actually need or want at the moment.
No, and it is a case of, if it happens to be for your army, and it has the stuff you want, then brilliant. And I was umming and ahhing about the Tau one, because I wasn't sold on the stealth suits. Mm. But in the end, I was like, no, they're pretty cool. And I probably should get it. I was tempted by the Age of Sigmar Stormcast one, but it just didn't have a particular models I wanted, so yeah, I passed.
I looked at the Guard one, but I am definitely going Death Guard of Krieg when I start on my Guard army, so no point.
Yeah, that's fair. The other thing that they've released in the run-up for Christmas, or announced anyway, have a bunch of easy-to-build kits, which are quite surprising. I'm not sure I get the logic behind this. So there is one for the Primaris Dreadnought.
I had it explained to me the other day.
What's that?
I asked my local store manager when he's getting them in.
Yeah.
And he said the main stores are probably not going to be getting them in. They're more for the independent stockists. And they're classed as like an easy kit, as you know, to drag people into buying it. As in like, right, we've got this model. It's got like, how many? I mean, how many parts has a normal Primaris Dreadnought got? A lot, let's say that. But it's fully posable and you're paying £40, is it?
Yeah.
Whereas the easy kit is cheaper, easier to put together, and basically allows somebody just to buy one just to get started.
Yeah.
That's why they're going to sell them at the independent stores. Don't get me wrong, I'm buying the Aggressors, the Dreadnought, because they'll go into my army very quickly.
Yeah, and it's a good idea. I'm just a bit bemused by the Dreadnought, because it looks identical to the one that's twice the price, and I don't know why anyone was ever going to buy that.
Not poseable.
Yeah, but they're not going to sell that many to people who just want to pose a Dreadnought. Most people are just going to pick up a cheap one. It just seems like a bit of a waste of all the tools.
I don't know. Okay, you're constantly dealing with my cynical mind, okay? And I actually thought it was a nice idea, because...
I'm not saying it's a bad idea, I just...
No, but a lot of us will buy a model, yeah? Especially if you've been playing this game for long enough and you know the ins and outs and blah, blah, blah. You know, you're comfortable with painting and modelling. So my Primaris Dread, for example, I posed that heavily. It stood up with one foot on top of a barrel and, you know, giving it large, as it were. And then I'm thinking, I want a second one. I won't be bothered about actually posing that one. Because no matter what pose it stood in, it's not going to match the original one.
Yeah.
So it's a cheaper way of getting another Primaris Dreadnought into the army. I need to remember what the bugger is called. Is it not Repulsor? Redemptor or something?
Yeah, Redemptor. Yeah. And amongst those kits were the Malefic Blight Haulers, which are the last remaining Death Guard kit, which I'm quite excited about, especially since you need three of them, really. You don't need three, but they get plus one to hit if there are three of them. And, yeah, I was fully expecting to have to pay £100 for three of them, but they're like £20 each. So, I'll be getting three of those.
And they look pretty good as well.
They do. They also release some free one-off Blight Guard Terminators who look terrible. Absolutely terrible. And they've got the weapons choices that you really wouldn't want to take. And of course, being single pose. So I kind of hope... I mean, it's good that GW is getting people to buy... getting new people in. The hobby needs new people. I just hope they don't go too far down this single pose model kit. Because I like the weapon options. I like being able to pose stuff. By all means, bring them out as long as we have the other options as well. So,
It took them years to move away from the single pose models. They're not going to go back to that.
Most of the Death Guard are single pose.
Yeah, but that's Death Guard. They're just big, putrid looking things. See, I can't swear. So, you know, I had to think of something then. Yeah.
Okay. So, that's sort of what's been going on, really. Now, the big thing for me, anyway, is the release of Chapter Approved, which I have here in my hands. Now, Chapter Approved has divided people. They're saying, I've just bought the rules, I've just bought the index, now I've just bought my codex, and now I've got to buy something else. This is ridiculous. Yep. And I kind of see that, and I think that's what you think, isn't it, Andy? But
yeah, essentially.
Chapter Approved is based on the highly successful General's Handbook in Age of Sigmar. Now, Age of Sigmar was a complete mess of a release. It absolutely killed the game. Nobody wanted to play it. The game didn't work very well. It didn't have points, etc. Then General's Handbook came along. They wrote it with a bunch of people who ran tournaments and a bunch of players who were miffed with the way that Warhammer changed. And overnight, it became the best game out there, in my mind. I still think Age of Sigmar is the best miniature game in existence at the moment. It's bloody brilliant. And it's because of that...
Comment. I've never played it, but you are very frothy about it. So
I am.
It must have something to it.
And it is entirely because of that General's Handbook. Now, The General's Handbook is something they release every year, and in it are new points values, additional rules, basically their version of stratagems and warlord traits, etc., for armies that don't yet have a codex out.
Yep.
New missions for match play, so for ones you're going to play in tournaments, and then the rest of the book is cool things for narrative play, campaigns, etc., different ways of playing the game.
Yeah.
And they release it every year. They're on their second one now, and the second one has completely changed the game. So for a while, it was a year's worth of people playing armies, and it got stale towards the end of that year. You know, you're not really a tournament person, but when you go to tournaments, eventually
you see the same armies.
You see the same armies. And then overnight, General's Handbook comes out, and you see different armies. And in another 9 months now, I guess it is, it's going to change the game. And I love that. Yeah. It means that they can fix mistakes, they can rebalance stuff, they can give other armies that are currently struggling a chance. And you know if your army sucks, it's going to be only going to be for a year. And the missions are one of the main things, because it just, if certainly in War Machine, they change the missions every year, and it really stopped the game from going stale. And I think that's one of the things that's happening in Age of Sigmar. Now, Chapter Approved is their version of this, or their attempt to do this for 40k. So, looking at it now, at the start, there are all ways to play 40k, and it's got open play, narrative play, match play. And then, in the open play section, we've got the rules for Apocalypse, which is pretty cool. So, Apocalypse is the really large point value. So, say you've got four mates and you want to do a 10,000 aside battle, or you want to play, you know, five super heavies, that's Apocalypse. And it's quite popular, or it used to be, and it's where you get your Titans out and your Orc Mega Gargants and stuff. And so they've got in here the rules for playing it and some missions especially for it. They've got
Apocalypse has always been one of those. I mean, I've had one game of Apocalypse. I think that was, well, actually when they brought out the first rules for Apocalypse, was that 5th edition, I think?
Yeah, sounds about right.
I've got to admit, we all had one game and then went, nah, that takes too long.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of it, but I do know when I go to Warhammer World, there's almost always some people, generally, you know, four aside, on one of the huge tables, spending a whole day playing a massive game, and that it looks really cool. So I'm happy that they can still do that.
Oh, it looks cool. Don't get me wrong; it looks amazing when you've got these massed armies. I just think it starts getting into the realms of, can we hurry up now? You know what I mean?
And then after that, there is some conversion rules for Land Raiders. So, making your own Land Raider variant.
That's for open play only, is it?
Yeah, it's got big stamps on all of the pages with open play on it. So, you know.
Well, that's something I'd probably be more interested in, because I'm more of an open play
player
than tournament.
Then,
and I designed some kind of mental-looking Land Raider with as much as I could get on it. Big guns for the win.
So, then we've got Planet Strike rules. This is in the narrative section. So, in games of Planet Strike, armies battle to the death in a devastating planetary assault. Players take specific roles. One is attacker attempting to wrest control of a planet, and one is defender. So, this is very much for telling your own stories and your own reenacting, you know, things you've read, etc. It looks pretty detailed. There's special warlord traits, special detachments. So there's a Planet Strike attacker detachment, which is different to the Planet Strike defender. There's some new stratagems in here. And again, there are eight, with new deployment zones. So there's one where once a team starts in the middle and then you come on from the sides. And I think that seems pretty cool for narrative. There's also Stronghold Assault, which is in games of Stronghold Assault, two forces vie for control of a fortified war zone. Players take specific roles, one is attacker, one is defender, who must dig in behind the fortress walls and repel the invaders. So this is where you've got your giant fortress set up. And once again, there's missions, etc. So,
what's the important question, though?
Yeah.
How many points did Bobby G go by?
We'll get there. Bear in mind, all of the stuff I've gone through now, points don't affect. They're all power level. So narrative and open all power level. So points changes don't matter, which is the genius of this whole thing, I think. Linear campaigns, stuff about running your campaign, you know, a never-ending one. There's a load of fortification rules in here, so bastions and bunkers and macro cannon, Aquila strong points, whatever those are. So, yeah,
it's a tower with a gun on it, I believe.
So that is, I'd say the first, that's half a book. And if you don't really fancy doing any of those, and you only do open play and narrative play, then don't buy it. If you do open play and narrative play, there's some cool stuff. Maybe if you like playing Apocalypse, or you've got some, you know, you own some cool scenery, cool, but you don't need it.
To be honest, the fortifications actually sounds quite interesting.
I think they've put a lot of thought and a lot of effort into making some fun ways to play the game, which are entirely optional. So yeah, I as a match play player myself, I probably won't. After tonight, I probably never look at those again, I must say. It's the same for General's Handbook. I haven't even opened the first half of mine. But that's because I play match play, and that it doesn't make me any better or worse than anyone else. That's just what I choose to play. So, moving on to a match play. Now, this is the thing where, if you want to play in tournaments, you need this book. Now, that might be contentious, and the only thing I think they've done a bit wrong is releasing it so soon after 8th edition.
Which was my main point.
Yeah. With the General's Handbook, they released it a year after. So you had a year of playing, then you had version 1.1, then a year later version 1.2. Now, I think they've done this because they obviously wrote it after the rules. So they've obviously been trying to fix stuff as they go along. Mm. And what they're trying to do is encourage what a lot of other games have. So X-Wing, Magic the Gathering, War Machine, Guild Ball, they are really tournament focused, and people will go to, you know, world championships where you can win money. It's really that sort of esports aspect to it.
Yeah.
And the trouble with miniature games is when you're trying to do esports and there's a prize, if you sit down and your army is completely amazing versus the person who has got picked the wrong codex, they just lose. So
yeah, it's very much the unfortunate side.
Yeah, so in order to make it a competitive, in order to make something a proper competitive game, you've got to patch it, like World of Warcraft, and you've got to do it fairly often. Now, I think they've put this out so that they can get a head start, so that for their competitive stuff, and they're trying to support it a lot. They're going out to the Las Vegas Open, they're going out to Adepticon, they're streaming games all the time on Warhammer TV, they're running the Grand Tournaments again. They're really trying to foster a game where you can play with your mates and have a great time and paint stuff and it'll be awesome. But also, using exactly the same models, you can play a really tight tournament game. And that's why I really like 40K. That's one of the main reasons I've come back, because I like a bit of both. I like being able to play with my friends, I like the cool models, but I do really like playing in tournaments as well. So that's why they bought this
each
book.
Their own. I mean, it gives you enough options to play the kind of game that you want to play. That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I love about
thing about 40K at the moment.
So, in the match play are new battle fronts. So, there are new missions. These are to be used, apparently, I was listening to Warhammer TV tonight. These are to be used in addition to the existing ones. So they're not to replace them, but I think a lot of people will really like them, especially those who got sick of playing essentially the rewritten missions from last time. So there's some really cool stuff in here. There's 6 Eternal War ones and 6 Maelstrom ones. And I love Maelstrom games. If you haven't played it, try it. Really, really good fun. For those that don't know, sorry, Maelstrom of War is where they're all objective marker based. And the objective markers do different things depending on the cards you draw. So you have to buy an open tactical objectives pack or something. It's only a tenner from Games Workshop.
Are well worth it, yeah.
Oh, they're brilliant. So generally it involves sort of having a hand of 3 to 6 cards. And it tells you what you need to do. So it might say, score objective one. And so you've put down your six objectives with numbers on them. Yeah, okay, what I need to do to get this 1 point is score objective one. That's on my side of the board. Brilliant. Okay, what's the next one? Kill a psyker. Oh dear, the psykers are all back in the corner. I'm not going to be able to do that one. And it's, but then next turn, you might have something completely different. So your enemy can be completely destroying you, and you could just be there going, I'm just going to go over here and kill this one model for no reason whatsoever, because it's all secret. And it just means that you can play a really cool, fun game that just changes as you go along. So even if you're losing, even if you're bored, it can draw. You can draw a card, and even if you don't win, you can still have something to aim for. And I think Maelstrom
Boy is brilliant.
Yeah,
you can feel like you're still in the game.
Yeah. So, yeah, six new Maelstrom missions, which I haven't read through, but they look pretty cool. There's a little section here on objective markers, so it gives you some kit bash ideas for different armies. So there's Chaos, Necron, Tyranid, and basically they are using spare bits of sprue, which well, not sprue, but spare bits you clip off your models and you don't need. And I think that's a really sweet idea, actually. I know I've got a bunch of these bits for Dark Elder. I'm probably going to make some of these.
It feels like they're going back to how they used to be with, hey guys, you've got all these spare bits, convert, build.
Yeah.
Because that's how the game started, and then for a lot of years it felt like they were discouraging that. It was, oh, don't scratch build, just buy what we release. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think a lot of the businessmen that were doing that have left the company, and now the company is once again run by hobbyists. And one thing a lot of hobbyists like is building cool things.
Yeah, that's why we get into this, because we want to paint and build.
Yeah, so,
you know, X-Wing is very popular because you don't need to.
Exactly, and this is why I worry about these single build kits. I don't think that the same type of hobbyist necessarily wants to do both, but we'll see.
Great,
I mean,
great if you're buying them for a, well, for an example, yeah. Say, all right, this is how much I understand kids, right? Say a 10-year-old, yeah?
Yeah.
He's going to have less skill in building a model kit, right? Because I remember building a model kit as a kid and it'd take me forever. Nowadays, you're pretty much banging it out in no time flat.
Yeah.
So an easy kit is so much simpler for them to put them together, and then they've got the start of an army and they think to themselves, I'm going to buy that box set now because my skill level's increased. And then GW's got them.
Do you know what? You're entirely right there. I always forget about kids. And I think that's something a lot of older Warhammer players forget about, is that this game isn't... Yes, it is for us, but you need to get the kids involved too, because otherwise in 10 years' time, it'll just be 40-year-olds rather than 30-year-olds.
Yeah, those kids are the future revenue. When we started, you know what I mean?
The children have a future.
I hate you for that. But it is. It's, when we started, there was all the old geezers in the shop. And I hate to say it, mate, but we're now the old geezers in the shop.
Well, you are. I'm the old geezer smoking outside the shop.
Well, all right, I'm stood outside the shop, but I'm still at the shop, you know, getting funny looks from all the younger ones going, oh, it's one of those creepy guys.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't. Yeah, that's not a good look to go for, mate. Anyway. Yeah,
it's a look that works on me, so...
Finishing off the chapter approved, so then we've got faction rules. Now, everything in here, there are some new abilities, new relics, new warlord traits, psychic power stratagems, and these are for armies that don't yet have their codex. So basically they have a page each looking at it, and they've got 1 to 2 stratagems, 1 to 2 warlord traits, a relic or two, and there are Sisters of Battle or Adeptus Sororitas. So that would lead me to think they're going to get a codex. There's Deathwatch, Drakari.
And Plastic Sisters, reset.
They're going to come out. There's Jeans to the Cults, Harlequins, Imperial Knights, which is interesting because they are in the Mechanicum books, so maybe we'll get a Knights codex as well. There's Necrons and Orcs, Space Wolves, Tau and Thousand Sons. Now, they have said that some of these factions have got more in here than others, and they've strongly hinted that if your faction doesn't have very much in here, That means you're higher up for Codex release schedule than one that does get and gets lots. So that's strongly suggesting that orcs have got one warlord trait, one relic, and two stratagems. So that suggests they're going to be quite high up the release chain, because that's not very much. That'll be a
couple of people we know very happy then.
It will be. Them and Tau as well. So I would put money on Orcs and Tau being the next two codexes after Demons.
Sweet.
Then after that, there is an appendix which goes through basically clearing up some stuff. There's Battlefield Terrain, where it talks about basically what the Citadel kits can represent. So these are quite a lot of the Armageddon is that the box? Shadow War Armageddon. So always cool kits that came out. Here's some rules for using them in a game. There are some rules for playing on Industrial Worlds, so using all those kits.
It touches on that briefly in the main rulebook though, doesn't it? Because you've got pipe farms and urban scenery and whatnot.
It does. I think this is more detailed. So it has more rules like a hemothrope reactor, units within 3 inches of a hemothrope reactor that at least 25% of skewed by it receive the benefit of cover. Roll a d6 every time you make a saving throw, a 7+. For a model within 3 inches of a hemothrope reactor in the shooting phase, on a 1, the model's unit suffers a mortal wound. So it's got rules for all of these things, which look, again, I doubt I'll ever look at them, but if you've bought the Shadow War Armageddon kit, then it's actually pretty cool to be able to use them in your 40k games. Then we've
I do have a lot of scenery kits at the moment that I need to start assembling.
Yeah, scenery is... I don't have a gaming table at home at the moment. I'm very tempted to save up and get one of those ultimate tables of gaming when I eventually buy a house. Have you seen them?
I have. I'll be honest with you. I kind of went for a... I won't call it a cheap build because it wasn't that cheap, but it was... it was nice. I went for one of those really solid fold-out tables from Amazon. Plug.
send us stuff, Amazon.
But yeah, basically it's sturdy enough that you can lean on it without it flipping over. And for a actual covering, what I thought I'd do is get loft floor panels, which are all basically 1 foot by 4 foot. And I got 6 of them. So I can go the 6 by 4 table, or I'd have it smaller, and you know what I mean?
Mm.
And because they slot together, because of the... this is me not being a carpenter at all. Yeah, because of the, what they call, the grooves, the...
Dovetail joints.
Something like that, it sounds about right. It's actually really sturdy and packs away flat.
That's a good idea. I will have to come and play you at some point.
Not allowing you in my house.
But...
yeah, you can visit the real North, mate, not what you call North.
Anytime,
you want to come up in the new year, go for it.
Cool, we will do that. Maybe we can record it and put it up on my Facebook as well.
What a swearing.
Then, finishing off Chapter 3, we've got some rules here for ladder campaigns, which I know are very popular in gaming stores. That's a pretty cool idea, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the bit that a lot of people just flipped to when they got it is updated points values. So, this is a bit at the back where they've gone through and they've re-evaluated points. Some things have gone up, some things have gone down. So, Gilliman, what was he before?
Off the top of my head, not a clue, mate. And my codex is at the other side of the room.
He's now 385. I think he was 350, so I think he's only gone up a little bit.
That's nearly nothing.
No. Whereas some things have... I know my Death Guard tournament list that I'm taking has gone down by 100 points. So I can take even more stuff. It's... I don't think there's much... massive change in there. And then we got to a really surprising bit at the back, which is updated points values Forge World. No one was expecting this, because traditionally Forge World have done their own rules, everything's been separate. I think this is the first time there have been Forge World rules in a normal Games Workshop book. So in here we've got rules for the Forge World models, and a lot of them have gone up by a lot. So,
has the Leviathan Dreadnought gone up?
Let's have a look. Leviathan Dreadnought Relic. Leviathan. Where's Leviathan Dreadnought? It's a Hellforge unit, isn't it? No, it hasn't gone up at all. It's exactly the same as it was.
Shame.
But things like Titans have. They've doubled. Actually doubled. So now, basically they've said, Titans are only for Lords of War. Are only for Apocalypse games. Which are points anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But the greater demons from Forge World have gone up. So the Tzeentch one has been causing a lot of problems on the tournament scene. I can't remember which one he is. I think he's Zeran Slugil. He's gone up to 666 points, which is a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah, the Tau Supremacy armor, which is what I was going to get, because it's not quite Titan sized. It's only 150. No, more like 300 quid. But anyway, that's gone up to 1,500 points. The Manta Super Heavy Dropship has gone up to 2,000 points. So
that's the really expensive model as well.
I think it's as many points as it is pounds now.
Ooh.
So the points to pounds conversion level is pretty. So one of the main changes is Malefic Lords have gone up to 80 points.
I heard about that one.
So everyone who's running their 10 Malefic Lord lists won't be anymore. I think we'll just switch to Primaris Psychics, who are still super cheap. But
yeah. Well done there, Doug.
What?
You successfully changed my mind on Chapter Approved.
Wow. Okay.
No, because all of the other content I like the sound of, and when on the build-up to this book being released, they hadn't mentioned most of that. They'd just pretty much gone, build your own Land Raider and points. And I'm there thinking, well, so what? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's...
But the rest of it, especially for campaign play, which is something me and my mates around my area, that's what we like to play.
Cool.
I might actually go in and pick it up.
Considering it's 20 quid or £17.50 from the Outpost or Firestorm, which is where I got mine from, I think it's pretty good value. And clearly says on the front, 2017 edition.
Well, I ran out when I bought the indexes when I knew the codex was coming out anyway.
Yeah, you can't buy many single models for less than that now. So I think it's very good value. I'm quite glad I bought it. And as I said, 2017 edition on the front. We are going to get another one in 2018, and hopefully it will have some more cool stuff in it. So it will change all the points and missions again. But also it should have a load more stuff for open play and narrative play. Because the idea is they don't want to keep releasing editions every couple of years. They want to keep these core rules going. You don't have to buy a new rule book. You don't have to buy new codexes. I just want to tweak it and give you more stuff to stop you getting bored. So I'm well behind it. I think a lot of the outcry about having to spend £20 on it is going to die down when people realise that it's going to keep the game alive for a long time. So yeah, there you go.
Okay, fair enough. Yep, I will probably go out and pick that up.
Cool.
I'm like the roving reporter on the site.
Yeah, well, Chris, tell us in detail what is going on in the hospital car park.
In the hospital, so I can see some smoke currently, which is not the most exciting thing, but the biggest news of the day is I've become a daddy. Hooray!
Yay, we've already covered that. Move on.
old news, mate. Come on.
All right. So he's been a little bit poorly, so that's why we're still in hospital, just trying to get him fixed and everything. So my warhammering has been very little for the last couple of weeks. But there we go. It's all right. It's getting better. So good. That's all that's important.
Good. And you're really excited about Dark Angels, aren't you?
I am, to the point where my Tale of Three Gamers army has just been put on a shelf out of the way, and I've been painting Dark Angels when I've had the chance coming back from hospital.
Slacker. Total
I know. I tried the thing, and obviously I'll put some pictures up because I think they're quite cool, that what I tried. They didn't come out completely brilliantly, but it's an interesting technique for people like the Necrons. With the weathered appearance, but Dark Angels Codex coming out, it gets released on my birthday. It was the first army I ever did 25 years ago. It just makes sense to go and play with the green guys again. So that's why I've jumped back to them.
What is it you like? Sell me on Dark Angels, because we were talking about them, and I like the idea of a Terminator army, but they're a bit mopey. What is it you love about Dark Angels?
I think because they've had such an eclectic background in the past. So obviously the original Deathwing story about the native Indian kind of style, and they'd painted all their armor white. That was the bone color of the ash, things
that,
like that.
By the way, was brilliant. That backstory was brilliant.
And it's still in there as well, to be fair. It's just one of those tales that they kind of tell of the reasons why they've gone that color. So they've updated it a little bit, and it is still featured within the background. I think it'll be mentioned in the codex when we see it. The Ravenwing, obviously, are cool as well. I think obviously some of the Horus Heresy background that's come out has been really good. And obviously, you've got that whole banter of loyalists or whether they were traitors and things like that.
Traitors.
We'll just sidestep that one and go from there. But I think the other thing is, obviously, they're kind of like Marines plus. But obviously, everyone just thinks of them a little bit maybe as the Bike and Terminator army. And I think I like the green, so I haven't painted any Terminators so far. I haven't painted any Ravenwing. I've got some on my Christmas list, but it's just painting green Primaris at the moment and really enjoying the models. Cool. The Redemption's stunning. The Marines themselves are brilliant as well. So I actually really, really enjoyed it. So again, I'll put some pictures of those up just so people can have a nosy.
Awesome. Quick question, Chris.
Yeah.
Because you know the background to the Dark Angels possibly more than us too.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, originally the Dark Angels were all in black, yep?
Yep.
And then they had a bit of a civil war falling out.
Yep.
And all the Fallen kept the black armor, and the Dark Angels repainted theirs to green, yep?
Sort of. The green had started to come in long before Caliban was blown up in the background.
Oh, okay, because I was wondering why, if, you know, they've changed the colour scheme so they're not associated with the goodies.
Yeah,
the baddies.
Basically, when you had the Caliban recruits started coming into the Dark Angels Legion, so you had the original Terran Marines who were all in black armour with their silver or gold trim. And then when they found Johnson and they started recruiting on Caliban, and obviously you had raised company after company of Marines, they started including green within their colour scheme then. So it started off with the green shoulder pads, and that's obviously expanded out over the years to become a full green heraldry, basically.
Okay, so it's just, I was just curious as to why. Obviously, I know why the Raven Wing are black, seeing as a Raven's Wing is, you know, black. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a reminder to the, you know, the baddies that split away from the Legion.
Yeah, I think, because they were black, obviously, back in time. Obviously, Deathwing were black as well. And then you had the Iron Wing, which was the vehicle kind of companies in the background, and then you also had the Dreadwing, which were the Legion killers, planet killers that used all the radiation weapons and things like that. And there's a couple, I think there's Firewing, and there's another one as well. So there were six different wings altogether in the background that's come about nowadays.
Did not know that.
Me neither.
There you go.
Learning.
Oh, I'm going to have to buy the Dark Angels codex now.
But that's all of those. The wings are all part of the Horus Heresy stuff. So I think when we see the next Heresy book come out, which obviously has been delayed a little bit because of the loss of Alan Bligh, I think we'll see more and more of it now. But in the not the last Heresy one, so it's not the Prospero one, the one before that, there's a lot of Dark Angel stuff in there when they were going to war with the Night Lord. So really, really good, really good. I think, obviously, everyone says it's easy to call them traitors, but if you read the background a little bit, they're probably more loyal than the Ultramarines.
Quick pop quiz for you.
For the night.
How now, dare you? The Ultramarines never went off and formed a second Imperium. Oh, no, where we do.
What do you reckon the chances are of getting the Lion? Because Codex comes out in 2 weeks. Haven't heard a thing about him. What do you reckon? Could they have kept it that quiet, or is it just not going to happen?
Is there a number less than 0%? Because I think it's there if it is. I didn't believe at all that he was going to turn up. It's just the wrong time in their release schedule for Games Workshop. I don't think they'll do Lion first. He's popular, but I think there's probably other Primarchs that may be more popular.
My money is still on Lehman.
Yeah, my gut is, well, it kind of goes against the background a little bit because the original background is Russ went looking for the Lion. And if you have Russ reappear before the line, it kind of ruins that a little bit.
Yeah, but he could just turn back up, go to the Rock and go, oh, he's here. Why didn't I think I'm looking for him here?
Sniff his pants or something like that and tell where he is.
And then make kiss and he wakes up.
Yeah. Three most likely ones, Russ, Johnson and Sanguinius. And I think we might see It's one of those three.
I'm desperate to see Vulcan, honestly.
Yeah.
That could very easily return, along with Jagati Khan as well.
The options are there, really. I think you'll see one of those three, though, just because they're separate codexes. It depends which way they want to push the storyline. I think the line will be best, partly because I'm kind of biased towards it, but I think his style versus Guterman's style will be really, really interesting. Yeah.
Well, in all fairness as well, just going from the modelling point of view, when you look at all the artwork for the lion, he does look pretty boss.
Yeah, he's your stereotypical knight without being a
Teutonian knight in power armour.
But he's kind of like a savage at the same time without being Leman Russ savage. So it's a really interesting one.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Cool.
That'd be good.
So yeah, there we go. Probably going to wrap it up shortly because we've been talking for over an hour now, and people will be bored. but just say I will be at the GT Heat 2 this weekend. I will be wearing my branded Reanimation Protocol polo shirts, which I rushed off the printer this weekend, and they look all right.
we didn't get them.
No, I'll get you and some then later.
He's only put an order in for one. It's terrible.
I put an order in for two so I can change my clothes in a two-day gaming event. So I'll be like one of two people doing that.
I was going to say, you're going to stand out if you do that.
So yeah, come and say hello if you're a listener, and watch me lose horribly to a bunch of really powerful armies. That'll be fun. Hopefully I'll make it anyway. I've been a bit under the weather lately, so I'm really hoping I don't have norovirus kicking on Friday, which is a distinct possibility. So if you do see me and I'm vomiting into a bin, that's why.
What have you pre-booked the norovirus or something?
Yeah, I've ordered it.
Usually it takes people by surprise, but no, I've got a slow build-up.
Yeah, hopefully I'm just a hypochondriac. That's certainly what my wife thinks, so we'll be fine.
She's not totally wrong, is she?
So before we go, Andy, you had a fun game for us to play.
Well, I wouldn't say fun, that's pushing it.
You said it was fun.
All right, quick fire, because Chris is amazing at these. If you remember Primark, Shag, Marry, Kill. So, Chris, if I mention to you a faction, yeah, be it like, say, Dark Angels, Blood Angels, Ultramarines, Tyranids, Samhain, yep. You've instantly got to fire back the music they listen to.
Right, okay. This might be easier than Shag, Marry, and Avoid.
No, it might be. Dark Angels.
Gregorian chanting.
No, oh, really? It's got to be My Chemical Romance.
Bam, you see, that's the one I was going to say. Ultramarines.
Gregorian chanting.
I'll go with that, actually.
I think I'd go Ultramarines as being Muse. So quite pretentious, but kind of good at the same time.
You know what, you really want to hate them because they're good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get you.
Iron Warriors. Oh, Iron Warriors. What's that? Rammstein.
There we go. Yeah. Industrial metal.
Okay, Andy. Gene Steelers.
Oh, so, right. Okay. Trance.
Yeah. I can definitely see him taking a lot of drugs and doing trance music.
I can't work out if this is a better or worse feature than Shag, Marry, or Avoid.
Oh, mate, it's way worse.
We haven't got that much room to slide down, so...
At this point, I'm really glad my battery's on 1%. Is it about?
Wow, this is brilliant radio, folks.
I honestly thought his phone had died then.
He's hoping.
Yeah. He's now opening apps in the background. Just die, die, die.
I think that's probably the point when we're all wishing for a sweet release of death to press stop. So,
well, good luck with your tournament.
Thank you very much. I will probably be talking about it next weekend quite a lot. So
yeah.
Okay, thank you all for listening, and see you soon. Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.